Gillespie. I am your host, Josh Gillespie. You are here on FTRradio.com. With me tonight will be Christy Kelly from HoosierAccess.com and ChristyKelly.com and Mark Warner from HoosierAccess.com. We got a good show for you tonight. Tonight we're going to be speaking with Indiana State Representative Dave Frizzell, who made his Gillespie debut on the debut of Gillespie. We'll be talking about Strengthening Indiana plan, which is a plan that was put together by Indiana House Republicans, and remarkably, it could be used in every other state here in the United States. It's basically a national plan. We'll be talking to him about the Strengthening Indiana plan, as well as the Indiana Republicans' amazing victories on election night, November 2nd, where the State House Republicans went from a 52-48 minority to a 60-seat majority with a pickup of 12 seats, which is just amazing. And we'll talk about redistricting. Then we'll talk to Christy about healthcare. She's been on and off the show recently. Her schedule's been very busy. She's been moving. She's been taking her classes her role in the healthcare industry will give us an incredible insight onto how Obamacare is already affecting our country. And then it would be wrong of us almost to not have a TSA discussion. Mark Warner and I will be playing a point counterpoint on the whole TSA situation. But because nearly every single pundit, blog, and news site that has been expressing their opinions regarding the current TSA pat-down program, or the porno scanners, as some people like to call the other things, I'm declaring tonight's monologue as a TSA free zone. Instead, I'd like to borrow an idea from a post on HoosierAccess.com written by my good friend Jacob Perry regarding the recent IPO from General Motors titled Barack Obama, Chief Investment Officer. What really got me thinking was President Obama's recent comments about the alleged success of the GM takeover, where he said, "American taxpayers are now positioned to recover more than my administration invested in GM." In other words, the president is boldly declaring a profit in our investment in GM. My question to him and the other supporters of this idea is, where? How? What profit? Let's review the facts, shall we? Well, referring back to Jacob's post, one, this past spring, GM ran television commercials, and the then CEO even wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal declaring that GM had actually paid off all of its debt to the Federal Treasury. This gentleman was either grossly mistaken or simply a blatant liar, as that wasn't even remotely true. The fact that he left his position as CEO shortly thereafter can be taken however you'd like it. The truth is, though, that GM actually used proceeds from other government loans in order to pay that particular loan off. We're still short somewhere around $40 billion. Two, GM was trading at around $1 a share when the bailout was first proposed. Based on this past Friday's closing price of just over $34, you'd think we'd made a bundle. Sadly, you'd be very much mistaken. 3. The taxpayers need to be able to unload our remaining stake in GM for $52 a share. We would need to see a 53% increase in the share price just to break even. And 4. At the same time, we would need GM's total market cap to be around $60 billion at the time of sale. To put that into perspective, GM's highest ever market cap was only $57 billion, and that was in 2000. Well before its significant downsizing through its recent bankruptcy. Shockingly, even the government's General Accounting Office acknowledges this fact, writing in a report, quote, "The Treasury is unlikely to recover the entirety of its investment in Chrysler or GM, given that the company's value would have to grow substantially more than they have in the past." Close quote. So just to clarify, President Obama goes out and repeatedly claims that the GM bailout was a roaring success and that the taxpayers, meaning us, you and me, will make a profit. The GAO states otherwise, and so do the facts of the case. Friends, we can argue back and forth regarding whether or not the Fed should have actually taken both Chrysler and GM over, or whether we should have allowed them to go through bankruptcy and be restructured that way, just like every other company out there. Of course, not every other company out there has such a large percentage of its employees who habitually support Democrats either, but that's another story altogether. But what I do know is that it's completely disingenuous for this administration in general, and specifically this president, to claim that this particular bailout was good for anyone other than the unions, who also were huge supporters of this presidency. This was most certainly not a good deal for GM's white-collar, mostly non-union employees. Its previous shareholders, including many pension funds, 401k plans, and GM retirees, nor for us taxpayers. This bailout was nothing more than a concerted effort by a man who not only has never held an actual private sector job, but who truly seems to loathe the private sector, to burnish his leftist credentials with his most hardcore supporters. This deal never made any economic sense, and it makes even less sense now that we have the actual numbers to look at. The best part of this entire episode is that it's yet another piece of evidence that we have to prove that not only does liberalism not work, but it's a gross failure. Please stick around for the rest of our show. Like I said, coming up next, we'll be speaking with Indiana State Representative David Frizzell, who is the new majority whip in the Indiana House. Then we'll be talking with Christy Kelly about healthcare. And then we'll have the obligatory TSA conversation with me and Mark Warner on a point counterpoint. It's probably going to be more like a Statler and Waldorf conversation. Anyway, stick around. You're listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com.
Hey Gillespie fans, this is Fingers Tiberius Molloy. Listen to The Snark Factor with Fingers Molloy every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time only on FTR Radio. And check out my website, fingersmolloy.com.
I am on the phone with State Representative Dave Frizzell, the new majority whip in the Indiana House. Dave, thank you again for being on the show.
Well, Josh, it's always a pleasure to talk with you and hopefully with all my conservative friends as well.
Well, you are our very first guest, so it's always an honor to have you back on the show.
Sure.
I want to talk to you because Indiana Republicans had a very victorious night on November 2nd, and frankly, in the Indiana House experienced an explosion is the only way that I can basically put it, in new Republican members, and grew to a size that I don't think anyone ever expected. You previously had 48 seats in the House, and now you guys have 60. How did that happen?
Well, and I'm with you, Josh, to tell everybody that my guesstimation, I thought we were going to get 53, maybe 54. It was unbelievable. The close races all fell on our side. Some of the most Democrat districts, the one we just won, which was down in Evansville in that area, highly Democrat area, Wendy McNamara won by 8 votes. Now, that's still subject to, as you probably know, a recount, but we're pretty confident we're going to hold on to that 60th seat. But, I mean, all across, where we made our biggest gains was down in the southern part of the state. We just wiped just about everybody out. You know, Paul Robertson, Bob Bischoff, you know, you just go down the list. We got some that we never, ever thought we would get, but we did. And I do believe that on at least the southeastern part of the state, that's trending more and more Republican. A lot of the suburbs from Cincinnati all are moving out. They are Republican. So our stance down the southern part, which used to be very strong Democrat territory, is changing. It's becoming more Republican. So that bodes well for us in the future, which will help us a lot. As you know, this is an important vote because guess what? It's redistricting. So we'll be able to help the process along, I hope. doing a fair and you know, a fair process. But we will square off all those districts. You know, Indiana is basically a Republican state. If you saw the past elections where we lost, barely, we still had the majority of the votes across statewide. It's because we are a Republican state. So I'm looking for good things in the future. Hopefully we do things a smart way in regards to redistricting, and we'll be able to garner that, you know, being a majority for the next 10 years.
Well, tell me this. Was there a sense of satisfaction? I mean, clearly there was a sense of satisfaction in taking the House, but in, you know, in all these cycles, since 2000, when the Democrats won the House and took over redistricting, you guys won the House in 2004 on Democrat maps. But it seems like every cycle you guys have actually won, you know, when you tally up all the votes, you guys have won every cycle, but you haven't won the seats. Is there a sense of satisfaction in not only winning those seats, but just winning so big?
Yeah, absolutely. All the way around, Josh. I mean, part of that, as far as the districts, we really had a severe case of gerrymandering all across the state. If you see some of the shapes of these things, they had to do it that way in order to win the majority in the, as far as seats, but still lose the majority of votes across the state. That you have to give them credit for. They did a pretty good job. But this time around, everything fell into place. I mean, you know, if you look across the nation, everybody talks about Congress and the Senate, which is very satisfying. But more than that, we have picked up close to 700 seats across state seats across the country, the biggest gain since 1928. So for us, number one, we had a guy that, I mean, one of the best in his business, Mike Gentry, who was working for that caucus to help us with the races and all. He did a fabulous job. We had more candidates than we ever had before, and all of them were high-quality candidates. So we didn't have any vacancies. Democrats did, but we did a great job in recruitment. And then the third leg, of course, is fundraising. We all exceeded our goals in fundraising, which is no small battle considering where we are as far as the economy is concerned. We did pretty darn good. So you add all those ingredients up, I mean, in the Republican way, which on the state side it certainly was, you know, it was phenomenal. It was absolutely phenomenal. But you have to be, we were positioned to do very well. I mean, we were positioned to get 53, 54 seats, but we were positioned to win more if everything broke our way. And guess what? Everything broke our way.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, with the election behind us, with the organization day was this past week, you guys are ready to get set on moving forward, not only on Governor Daniels' agenda, but the House Republicans and Speaker Bosma, well, that's fun to say, Speaker Brian Bosma had outlined the Republican plan even before Election Day. It was called the Strengthening Indiana Plan. And frankly, you could apply the Strengthening Indiana Plan nationally. All these ideas can apply. And frankly, it was a couple weeks ago, the New York Times, just after the Election Day, highlighted some of the state legislatures that were going to be looking towards cutting spending, and the first legislature they highlighted was the Indiana legislature. And in Politico.com earlier this week, they had an article on highlighting three separate governors who are going to be looking to cut spending and balance the budget, and they highlighted Governor Daniels. And so Hoosiers clearly have been leading the charge, not just in Indiana, but nationally, in trying to rein in government spending and making cuts where they need to be cut. And the four pillars of the Strengthening Indiana Plan for our listeners, and again, these pillars can apply nationally, are protecting Hoosier taxpayers, promoting Hoosier job creation, expanding education opportunities, and standing up to Washington, D.C.
Exactly. You know, the thing is, the first thing that's going to be very important for us is the budget. There's no question about it. The governor has done a good job in cutting the different departments in anywhere from 20 to 25%. He has really cut deep. And he tried to forestall cutting with schools, of course. Alas, as you know, on an average, it was 3.5% cut. Some areas a little bit more, some areas less. But nevertheless, we try to avoid that. But, you know, when your budget is about 55% of its education, it's tough to avoid. Mm-hmm. You know, so the budget, we're going to look at something as far as income is concerning. We're looking around like 2005. That's going to be tough. That we're going to have the same expenditures as we did 5 years ago. So that tells you immediately that we're going to have to be very creative, and we're all going to have to cut more. Unless things turn around as far as the receipts to the state, i.e. sales tax, corporate tax, you know, individual sale, income tax, all those things, sales tax, they've got to do better. We had a good report last one month does not make, you know, what we can expect in the future. So we'll just have to wait and see. The other big thing you mentioned is education. We want the money to follow the child. That's what we want. We want that money to follow the child, no matter where they go, to public school or if they choose online virtual school or it goes to follow the child. And then finally, we've got to figure out creative ways, even create more and more attraction to businesses to come here. So, and the last thing, of course, we talked about, you know, letting the federal government know where we stand. Well, we do not like Obamacare. It's going to cost state anywhere $1 to $3 billion that we can ill afford, which will take away from education and the other department in our state. And we're going to have to do something to address that. And hopefully that happens on a national scene with the different court challenges that are being presented right now. We can't afford Obamacare, so we've got to, we're going to do several things. Of course, as you know, I carried, the 10th Amendment resolution, you know, that we should observe that here in the state, because this is truly a power grab by the federal government and is in my mind, unconstitutional grab of power, from the states. And I also would favor a referendum about appealing, and it's just good to have that in your, repertoire of weapons. Repealing Obamacare in this state. So there's a lot of things that we want to try, though we can't change. We want them, as far as federal government is concerned, we want to know them where we stand. And, you know, in further court challenges, that might be very helpful.
Well, one thing that I definitely wanted to pick your brain on, and you alluded to this earlier, is redistricting.
Right.
One, you guys have plenty on your plate this year. I mean, having to deal with 12 freshman members, and right. and but you know, having, like you said, dealing with the governor's budget. Yeah, this is our budget cycle, and you know, figuring out what to do with education and it just there is a lot. And on top of all that, you have to do, which, you know, you look back at 2009 and. Then Speaker Bauer decided to obstruct the House long enough that the budget cycle lasted until the last possible date in June.
Right.
Went through a special session. But
right.
on top of everything that you have to do this year, you have to redraw the maps.
Right. And I'll tell you what, that is going to be a harrowing experience for whomever. I believe that I think that Kathy Richardson, who's our chairman, caucus chair, has been assigned to start working on those maps. And, of course, we have to wait from the data to come, you know, as far as the numbers.
Yeah, from the Census Bureau.
Right, exactly. So it's not going to be easy. And here's why, and you're alluding to this, and I think you're absolutely right. We have 60 seats. Because every one of them had worked hard. I mean, really, all of them worked very hard to get where they are. The tough point comes, can you redistrict for 60 seats? The answer, I think, and I don't know, because, Josh, I don't have all those the census information
in
front of me.
Yeah.
My guess is no, you can't. So that's where the toughness is going to come. It's going to be very tough. We have pledged, or Brian Bosma has pledged, that we're going to make them fair. We're not going to split up communities. We're not going to have meandering fingers going all over the place. We're going to square them up, and we're going to do it as fair as possible as we can. So it is a tall order, not only to get that achieved, but also to try to have your caucus understand what we can and cannot do.
Well, speaking of fair, Brian Bosma certainly came out with a shocker this past week during Organization Day, he, with a new 60-seat majority in the House that is unprecedented, he made another unprecedented move by reaching across the aisle and tapping two Democrats to head two separate committees, much to the shock and awe of Republicans and, I can imagine, Pat Bauer. The former speaker, that too is also fun to say, it had everybody just kind of, their mouths were agape. I know mine was when I heard it. I'm going to put this pretty straightforward. What possessed Brian Bosma to tap two Democrats to head two committees?
Okay. Well, it's a long answer, and I'll try to keep it as brief as possible.
Okay.
And I think you're right. When we first discussed this, there were probably a lot in our caucus that had their mouths agape as well and were concerned about it. But I have to say, the more we thought about it, the more we thought this is not a bad idea. Two things that we all heard from my constituents, and I always said, well, you know, being civil, which is a good idea, being transparent, and trying to work together to get things accomplished. You hear that all the time. You don't hear that too much those who are involved in the nitty-gritty of politics. I mean, that's kind of foreign talk. So Ryan suggested it, and I have to say that our whole caucus agreed with it and supported it after we talked about it at length and discussed it and argued and whatever. We came to consensus this was not a bad idea. First of all, there is no committees that are now established that were given to the Democrats. In other words, the two that we proposed was one that was taken out from one of the other utilities, which probably makes a lot of sense. One that I work on as well, and that's on utilities and regulations. So, and they also had small business in there, but they decided to branch that off with commerce, small business, and economic development, which went to Steve Stimler. Steve Stimler is probably what I would say he could possibly, we always say a rhino. He could be, I don't know what they would call a Democrat who is very conservative, but he's one of those.
A dino,
people.
I think that's when I've
he's
heard
a dino.
A dino.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, you're up on it better than I am. Okay, so the dino. and I don't talk for Steve, and certainly he has family members who are staunch Democrat. I'm not sure if he'd ever make a change, but there is always a possibility because he's a smart, he's a good legislator, and is a conservative. Now, the other one was a committee that we were going to do in regards to call it Select Committee on Government Reduction. Now, I know when you put a Democrat there, you say, wait a minute, how can that ever happen? A Democrat in government reduction? But Chuck Dovis, as many may already know from my political people that are really involved in this, Chuck was kicked out of the leadership from the party because he made some votes that sided with Republicans. Chet is one of the brightest guys over there. He's been there for quite a while. And he is very conservative when it comes to regulation, I believe. And I believe he believes that there's too many laws on the books. We need to do reduction. And Chet
be able to carry the torch that Governor Daniels has been working on the last 2 years on?
Yes, I think
on government consolidation?
Yes. Now, here's what I want to tell you. Here's the thing. People forget that any bills that go to that committee, first of all, Brian decides where those bills go. Okay? Mm-hmm. And certainly discussion with the chairman before he sends those bills. That always happens. Secondly, on all those committees, except for Ways and Means, it's 8-5 Republican. Mm-hmm. So even if either of these guys went sideways about something, it wouldn't matter. It would not matter. So what I'm saying to you is we haven't lost anything. We actually extended an olive branch to the Democrats, which a lot of people say, hey, that's a good thing. But the problem is I don't know what the Democrats are going to do about it. These two gentlemen I think are trustworthy. They're good men. But as far as the rest of the caucus is, Bauer said when we said we're going to pass on the olive branch, extend it to the Democrats, Bauer's comment was, well, it also has thorns on it. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if the Democrat caucus, not these two gentlemen, decides they don't want to do this, that's not a good thing for them because public wants to say, okay, let's get some things done. Well,
yeah.
This would fly in the face of people with one. And secondly, more importantly, we're going to have everything's going to be transparent. Every committee, every deliberation will be on the computer. So everybody will be able to follow all that. So we're trying to make it transparent, extend, you know, where we think could be helpful in getting some important stuff done. But we haven't lost a thing. That's the whole thing. We have not lost one thing. And this was a discussion with the whole caucus, and though some of them might have said, well, I don't know, they all agreed to it. And so we're doing this together. So to my conservative friends, do not worry. Things are going to work out fine, believe me. And nothing.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I don't want to cut you off. You said nothing. What?
Well, I'm just saying nothing is ever going to impede what we need to do for the state as, you know, a conservative approach of doing things. Nothing is going to impede that, even with these two guys as chairman.
Well, you know, you guys give me encouragement, one, because you are, one, I could call this the unprecedented Republicans. Just
yes.
You took an unprecedented numbers in the House.
Right.
You're taking on practically an unprecedented agenda in the House this year.
Right.
And you're reaching on across the aisle in an unprecedented way.
That's right.
And it's an exciting time to be in Indiana. If any of my listeners follow local and state governments, keep an eye
right.
on Indiana, because this is definitely something to be keeping an eye on. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes.
And frankly, the way I've seen it is that Republicans, not just in Indiana, but nationally, are in a position to, as Karl Rove always talked about, having the permanent majority.
Yeah.
Now we actually have the ability to do it. And it's
exactly.
with the control of a lot of state houses and the map drawing. And this could just be an unprecedented time for Republicans if we play our cards right.
Right.
In our history.
Yeah, and Josh, we've got to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have principles about less government, less taxation, all those
mm-hmm.
things that are, you know, in our DNA as Republicans, real Republicans.
Yeah.
And if we transgress any of those principles, we'll be right back in the minority again. So
that's
I
right.
look at it this way. They have leased the space to us to see what we do.
That's
well,
right. That's right.
It's true, because if we revert back to when it was in 2006 and 2008, we're going to be kicked
mm-hmm.
out. Or a third party could be started. Because
right.
I believe the Tea Party, with their energy, they could do that. They have decided not to do that, and I think that's a wise thing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all waiting and watching to see what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I can name the rhinos. You know who they are. If we start
yeah.
acting like them, we are, hate to say it, we're dead meat. That's it.
Right.
This is the last shot we've got. We better darn sight do it right.
That's right. Well, Representative Frizzell, thank you for not only being a friend to me, but a friend of the show and a friend of conservatism. Your record proves it in the Indiana House, and thank you for being a leader. And I hope to have you on again
yes.
sometime during the cycle or during the session. We can find out what's going on and how some of these reforms are taking shape in the House. And I look forward to having you on again.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, it's going to be quite a ride. It's not going to be easy, Josh. It's going to be painful, but we got to do the right thing. I mean,
right.
I guess my last word is families across this country and this state have to sit down and decide to cut where they need to cut because they're in dire straits. We are too, and we got to do the same. You know, we should be no different than Hoosier families and what they do every day and every week.
That's right. Well, thank you very much, Representative Frizzell, and hey. We'll be We'll be right back here on Gillespie.
Hey everyone, it's Josh Gillespie of FTRRadio.com's Gillespie. Hey, have you ever been out and realized that you're about to miss your favorite FTR program? I'll tell you what you're going to do. You download the Shoutcast app to your smartphone. That way you will never miss another FTR show. So if you think you're going to be out and you're going to be up, you're about to miss Fingers Malloy and the Snark Factor, you're about to miss Jenny Erickson, or you're about to miss the Loud Talker, the Needle, have no fear. Download the Shoutcast app. Hey, you could even listen to my show, Gillespie, airing every Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on FTRradio.com. Download the Shoutcast app today.
Welcome back to Gillespie. I am here with Christy Kelly, which you guys may have missed her the last couple weeks. Christy has been busy. And granted, all of our schedules have been kind of crazy, so we haven't been able to get all of us together to do a segment, but I am thrilled that we have Christy back with us. Christy, you've been kind of busy lately. In fact, you just moved.
Yes, we did. We moved to small town America.
I feel like we're living
in Mayberry. I love it.
Oh, that's good stuff. And Christy actually lives not too far from me now, so she is definitely in small town America. And
we're in the same county.
I know. All I got to say is, you know, say goodbye to higher property taxes, and you know, now your biggest concern is whether you can actually have farm animals in your front yard. But you know, hey. Anyway. But not only that, have you moved, but you've been keeping pretty busy at your work. For those of you who may not know, Christy does work in the, we shall put it kindly, healthcare industry.
Right.
And frankly, with Obamacare and everything, Christy, I have to imagine that there was not only joy in the fact that Republicans won on November 2nd big, especially in the House, but there probably was some hope, I'm guessing, from you and maybe some of your employees or fellow coworkers. I don't know. I'll take a guess, but that maybe some of the things that you've seen already take place in the healthcare industry might may eventually go away. I mean, what's it been like for you in your job in the healthcare industry?
Well, the hospitals all across America are pretty much in full-on panic mode. Positions are being eliminated, department by department, and my position in the pharmacy was eliminated. And, you know, as you know, I'm going to nursing school, so I thought, well, this will be an opportunity to transfer to the nurse care team, and that's what I'm doing now. And while I'm continuing to work, go to school, and move, that's why nobody has heard from me, the pressures that I have been put on the nursing staff is just, you know, is exponential compared to, you know, a few years ago. And the nurses now are becoming, I think, more and more dissatisfied with their jobs. And it's starting to make me second guess. Am I going into the right field? This week, policies have changed. Nurses now have to work 12-hour shifts. Before, they had options. They could choose from 4, 8, and 12-hour shifts to work around their families. They have gone to all 12-hour shifts. In my position as a PSP, a patient support partner, most of us are nursing students, and they wanted to put us on 12-hour shifts, mandated 12-hour shifts, but because most of us are nursing students, it's just not, you know, feasible. So they backed off of that. But the nurses, you know, they're like, wow, we went to school for this. You know, this is how we're going to be treated now. And other cutbacks. You know, I was telling you earlier, you know, there's so much concern over the healthcare, quality of healthcare. And, you know, it's like, well, there's going to be rationing of healthcare, but it's going to be even worse than that. There's going to be danger in healthcare. And our nurses, and things, we don't even see this Obamacare in full force yet, but we see the effects of it. And one of those is where nurses have just now in my hospital have gone from having 4 patients to where they're required to take care of 6 patients. And
wow.
Yes. So, you know, when you think of everything that goes into the care of a patient, and the nurses are really managing from the beginning to the end of the care. You know, the doctors will read the labs, interpret them, but it's the nurses who are watching the vital signs and are deciding, okay, you know, they're blood pressure is elevated. It's time to increase, you know, their blood pressure medication, you know, et cetera. And when you have that many patients to care for in a high-paced, intense environment, mistakes can happen.
Yeah, well, now you're starting to see, at least this has been going on for a few years now, but there are less and less general practitioners and a lot more specialists. But, I mean, are we starting to see even fewer doctors and more nurses and more responsibilities put on you guys?
I know that the nurses, because of, you know, nursing has really evolved, and it's a wonderful field to go into. And we have so many people going, nurses going on, getting their master's degrees and becoming nurse practitioners and taking on more responsibility. And they're perfectly capable of it. But at the same time, they're taking also, they're having more, so much more thrust upon them. And responsibility that my concern is not that they're not capable, but, you know, there's just so much a person can multitask at once. You know, women are pretty good at multitasking, but we need to do that within reason and in a safe environment. And that's my concern is, well, rationing of healthcare is one thing, but the safety of our patients is it's on everyone's lips. That is the buzz in the hospital, and the nurses are pretty upset because they care about the safety of the patients, and they're just like, "What are we? How can we do this? How can we do our job?"
Mm-hmm. Man, you know, I remember during the height of the healthcare debate of I actually had to attend as part of my job, I had to attend I forget the organization that put on the program right off the top of my head, but it was an organization that's basically been advocating for a single payer system since 1993. So I knew I was basically walking into the lion's den. And then they had three, IUPUI professors. And one of them was talking about how, you know, it was just talking about, you know, basically nationalized healthcare, socialized healthcare, whatever you want to call it, is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And even as I was hearing him talk, the more I thought about it, the more I heard him talk, you could take what he was saying and basically say that, you know what? With more people coming onto the roles, then more than nurses and the doctors are going to be far more spread out. You're going to have far fewer people going into the field, and there's just going to be so much more place on you guys.
Yes, there really is.
Through no fault of your own, things will slip through the cracks.
That's right. That's right. It takes so much staff, as well as equipment and precautions to protect our patients. Just going into the hospital can be a dangerous situation. You know, when you're having so many procedures taking place, and human error is inevitable. But we have many safeguards that put in place and protocols to help, you know, prevent accidents and missteps. But at the same time, when the load becomes so burdensome, it's going to be very difficult to maintain those protocols and the safety necessary to protect our patients. And that is, you know, when you have four patients, it's doable. But when you have six critically ill patients, you know, patients who need your attention, one person, and then you have like a PSP assisting you, but that PSP could have 17 patients.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, how's that going to work? And we haven't even seen the beginning of Obamacare. We're just seeing what the hospital's gearing up for it and preparing for it.
Wow. That's incredible.
Man, they know, right now we don't even, we have floors, and I'll tell you something, the floors, the Medicare and the Medicaid floors, the floors that were those patients, of the hospital who take primarily patients who, are Medicaid patients, they know that those services are not going to be as well, reimbursed. And those floors are the ones who do not get the upgrades in the hospitals. They're the ones who are staffless in the hospitals. Because, and I hate to say it, but that is what happens. That's just what happens. because they have to operate, they have to run, and hospitals must, you know, they want to make a profit, but at the same time, you know, that's why you're in business, is to make somewhat of a profit, but you have to at least break even, and the government oftentimes, you know, barely compensates and pays back enough of the bill to do that.
Yeah. Well, Chrissy, I feel like we've just even cracked basically cracked the ice on this subject, and already our segment has come to a close. But frankly, I'm glad we got you at least on the phone, got you a part of the show again. Hopefully everyone's schedule can at least start to iron out here soon. I started a new job, and you know, we're all kind of just kind of in a post-election what are we all doing right now kind of mode. Hopefully by December, you, Mark, and I can get together again. But anyway, I'm glad that we could at least get you on this show. Hope we'll get you back on next week. And I hope everybody continues to tune in. Check out Chrissy over at her website at ChrissyKelly.com, as well as at HoosierAccess.com. And right now, when we'll be right back, we'll be speaking with Mark Warner. We'll be doing a little TSA two, pro and con. So that should be fun. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Whether you're a candidate, public office, or a small business, you have a story which is incredibly unique to you. The problem isn't having a story, the problem is how to tell your story. And that's where my friend Jacob Berry comes in. Jacob is a gifted storyteller who has the added bonus of being an experienced campaign professional, marketer, sales professional, and small business owner. Not only can he put the right words together, he knows exactly what needs to be said and how to say it. So the next time you need a speech, sales letter, article, or marketing piece, trust the professional I go to. Trust Jacob Perry. You can reach him on the web at www.jacobperry.us. Give him a call at 772-678-0820. That is 772-678-0820. Or drop him a line at jacob@jacobperry.us. Gillespie. I am here with Mark Warner. I'm glad that Mark could be with me this week. Mark and I are going to do a little back and forth on the whole topic of the TSA. TSA has definitely been getting, been making a little bit of news, shall we say, with the body screenings, the pat downs, and now the freakouts. It's a lot of fun out there to fly the friendly skies. So, we're going to do a little point-counterpoint. I'm going to be taking, shall we say, the devil's advocate side with the TSA. And Mark, you're going to take the side of the average flyer. And let me start out by saying that TSA, where they're coming from is, frankly, you know, the pat-downs. These pat-downs have been going on for a while. The body screeners, the ones where they're taking the pictures that can see through clothes, these have been around for a long enough time that we would think that we'd see these kinds of protests long beforehand. The pat-downs have been almost as aggressive. And if I may bring to mind the people's recollection of one of the last terrorist attempts on our country, was in Christmas Day of last year, where we had the underwear bomber. Now, frankly, he was coming over from Europe, but if that guy had been flying in the United States, I would want that guy's junk to be touched, because frankly, that's where his bomb was being hidden. It was in his junk. So yes, touch his junk. You think I might be a terrorist? I got a beard. You know what? I may be considered a terrorist. So.
Peach foot, man.
So go ahead, touch my junk if you think I might be a terrorist. But I'll tell you this, I flew this past week to and from Washington, D.C., and I had the pleasant experience of being able to go through the scanner and not setting it off. So did I get pulled aside? Nope. I just went on through. And you know what? I went through what every other single congressman who serves in the United States Congress and the senators, except those in leadership, because if you have a security detail, somehow you get to avoid all of these security checks. But you know what? You have a security detail, so chances are you've been frisked before you even got to the airport. But every other member of Congress has to go through these same things, and only because a guy happens to bring a camera with him and unknowingly to the TSA agent records the whole thing and comes up with America's new catchphrase, "Don't touch my junk," is everybody up in arms. Now, seriously, is this what it took? Some guy taking an unknown video of a TSA agent saying, you know, he's saying, okay, I'm going to have to pat you down. And he's like, all right, but don't touch my junk. And he was playing back and forth with them. Fine, I understand that. But, you know, I don't think TSA, if terrorists are willing to hide bombs in their underwear, you have, you know, drug smugglers for years have been hiding drugs up their rear ends. So, frankly, I don't think what is going on, in a sense, is all that out of the ordinary. Mark, what do you say?
Yeah.
And fine, look, go ahead. Fine, go ahead. Call me an establishment rhino over that.
I'm not going to call you an establishment rhino. My thing is, I'm all about security and protecting our skies. I'm 100% for it. But they are taking this way, way, way too far. Look at Israel, for example.
All right, let's look at Israel.
Israel has a great, great security force. Okay? Great security force.
Yeah, they got guys with AK-47s hanging out by the scanners.
I'm telling you, here's my thing with it. If we were to do security like Israel does,
yeah,
we would be a whole lot better off. Look how many people try to smuggle stuff into the airport. And they get caught, and you might not even hear about it. But Israel does it so much better and so much... Here's the thing. When you drive to the airport, you get stopped at the gate, and you go, "Oh, how you doing? Where are you headed today?" They watch you. They watch your body language. Then you get to the parking garage or whatever. Never been to Israel, so I can't really say how you do that over there. But you go to walk towards the airport, and there's people watching by cameras and by snipers watching you in your body language the whole time. They're watching you. They're watching your body language when you walk into the airport, and people are watching you all the way in. Okay.
Well, that's because people have been trying to blow Israel off the map since the state formed back in 1948. You have leaders saying they want to destroy Israel. They want to wipe them off the map. So, frankly,
guess what? They don't get through their airports.
Well, I don't think a lot of people are leaving Israel to go bomb the United States. What they're doing is they're leaving from other countries.
But at the same time, they're not. They don't have any problems in their airports. And look, Josh, you know me. I'm all – bureaucrats run this.
Bureaucrats are running this, and in fact
– they don't know jack about security. Come on, man.
These same bureaucrats
Some guy works at CST Security because he was a smart guy. Doesn't claim him to be a security professional. We need people in there that have been in the military, that have been in, you know, security. Perfect people to run this organization would be former Secret Service or a former CIA or a former FBI agents. They know security. They know what people do. They are trained. look, man, we're hiring people that's TSA agents who can't flip a burger at McDonald's.
Now, how do you know this? Because I think that everybody's understanding of how these
people. How many people that work at TSA are qualified to really even be there?
Do you know the security or the rigid qualifications or the hiring procedures that TSA people have to be hired? I mean, I personally,
they
I don't.
They just don't have to have a bad background.
See, okay, you know.
Okay, how many? I can guarantee you. You and I could go to the airport, hang out by the TSA security thing, okay? And just look at half of those people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you half of them have never been in the military. Half of them never been a police officer. Half of them never been in a security agency.
Well, then, how about this? Why don't we just have the military run the whole thing? Why don't we have military operation and guarding every single one of our airports? Much like, as you say, Israel does. If we're going to be taking the same sets.
You've got people that aren't qualified to do security that are doing it. And we got.
I wouldn't say that everybody isn't.
And we got bureaucrats teaching them don't know security, Josh. That's my point.
So you have a problem with the people who are actually the TSA agents more so than the body scanners or even the pat downs.
I have problems with bureaucrats running this.
Bureaucrats run everything, Mark.
Yeah, but Josh, they don't need to be running this kind of security. Am I qualified to run a security agency? No.
No.
Would I try? No.
No.
Are you qualified to run a security agency?
Oh, heck no.
Okay, this is my point. We got people in there that don't know jack about security.
Well, I found it interesting.
You talk to a TSA agent and they look you in the eye.
Oh, well, today being Sunday, I noticed that the headline on Politico.com today was TSA chief screening may evolve. But here, the furor seems to be because I like how the article starts, heating a sudden furor. Which, granted, that's what I'm saying. This stuff has been going on for months, and all of a sudden it's a sudden furor, and it's all sparked because of one dude's video. You know, he's saying that airport screening procedures will be adapted as conditions warrant in an effort to make them as minimally invasive as possible while still providing the security that American people want and deserve. So basically, he's going ahead and saying that, you know what, because everyone else seems to be really ticked off, not necessarily over the quality of the agent, but because of what the agent is doing, you know, terrorists, go ahead and continue putting bombs in your underwear. We're going to go ahead. You can go ahead and bomb our planes just because some other people don't want, you know, their junk touched.
First of all,
I'm just saying that's how it reads.
The TSA. Look, I'm not against the TSA fully. Okay, I'm against how they do this. Look, here's an example. When you cannot, now here, how does this make sense? Okay. When I flew the one time, I bought the Starbucks and I couldn't take it through. Okay, fine. I can't take it through.
Seriously? I got a bag of Ruffles through. Now, granted, I put it on the scanner.
I understand that, but now I said, well, why couldn't I take this through? And he goes, well, you know, it's hot coffee. You could throw it and you could use it as a weapon.
Seriously, the agent was saying you could use hot coffee as a weapon?
Right. So when
okay,
I walked
I have to admit, that's kind of funny. That's kind of funny.
When I walk through, there's coffee on the other side that I could buy and take on the plane with me.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing. They have these stupid rules that you can't walk through with coffee. You can't walk through with a bottle of water. You can't take a bottle of hot sauce with you because Lord knows you could use that as a weapon.
Well, I had hot I've sauce heard that there is a certain
Stop.
Kind of hot sauce that
this is about freedom, man. I had hot sauce confiscated from me at Tampa International.
Haven't you heard that commercial on the radio? I forget the kind of hot sauce that it's that they're selling, but the woman says that she uses that bleep on everything. And seriously, the woman's voice is bleeped out, so she could use it as a bomb.
You can't take that through.
Now,
come on.
Here's the thing, Mark. You could put it in your checked baggage, and you'd be fine.
Hey, hold on a second, though. Why should okay? I have seen people get their fingernail clippers taken from them.
Yeah.
My what dad, are you going to do with a pair of fingernail clippers?
Why are you taking a pair of fingernail clippers on the plane? Why don't you just put them in your...
Why
don't you
clip your fingernails on the plane?
Who the heck clips their fingernails on the plane? That's just gross.
Okay, but they're in your purse. Okay, women keep them in their purse.
What?
They can't carry them on there?
Put them in your check bag.
If a guy stood up on that plane and goes, I'm going to take this plane and I'm going to kill all of you with my fingernail clippers, I'm going to stand up and punch him in the mouth.
Now, Mark, that was just racist and insensitive. I don't know what accent that was, but I think you're trying to pick on Irish people, and I don't appreciate that. I do not tolerate that kind of bigotry.
I'm Irish, Josh. I'm Irish, so I can pick on myself. I'm just saying, if a person is going to stand up and go, I'm going to take this plane with his fingernail clippers, I'm going to probably laugh at that person, and then I'm going to punch them out and take their fingernail clippers.
Well, I would want you to.
So hard about this. They're making it harder than what it really is. And look, I am not against security of our plane, but when I can walk in into other federal buildings and not go through, it's just, I mean, come on.
I'll say, you know, on a final note, because we've kind of run out of time on our segment here.
Oh, we're not done with this conversation.
Oh no, we could talk about this for ages. One, Congress, this topic will be going on for a while. Congress is most assuredly hearing from constituents. I can guarantee you they are, and that investigations, whatever they may do, will be forthcoming. So this topic will be around for a while. But I'll say this, you know, going into an airport, the security, whether it was going, you know, getting onto an airplane, you know how you have to take your laptop out of a bag and have it go through the screener or get it scanned?
Yeah.
Walking into one of the house office buildings, I could leave the laptop in my bag.
That's my point.
I'm just saying. Anyway, we've run out of time on our show this week. Mark and I clearly could go on for an additional 20 minutes or so talking about TSA. excuse me. But I want everyone to stick around. We got Duke Over America coming up next, followed by Jenny Erickson and Michael Fidenza, the Armchair Energist. You've been listening to Gillespie on FTR Radio. We'll see you again next week.